Accession number 19055, Reel 5.
Brigadier Rendell, Reel 5. You were talking about MacArthur and this gentleman.
Oh, yes. He came down the steps in his hat, all at one side, and grabbed Al, whatever his name was, by the shoulder. Walker, Al Walker, General Walker, his name was. And said, long time no see, Al. They then proceeded to walk up and down about 120 yards alongside the aircraft. Well, a great crowd. We'd all lots of officers and soldiers, Americans, French, everyone you could think of. And they came back. And then he said, well, I'm away. And shook General Walker's hand again, walked up the steps, turned round, waved a kind of MacArthur-type wave. All the little photographers ran up the ladder, and they pulled up the ladder. The motors were running, and off she went. And that was how I saw MacArthur. Anyway, John Willow and I were watching that. And then from there, we went on up to the frontier. And I remember going with a commanding officer on the advance recce when I was going to lead the next day. And we went over a hell of a bump in the jeep. And who was with me? I think it was Peter Allen, A Company commander. I commanded A Company. He had C. Anyway, it was Peter Allen, I think. He said, what the hell was that? And the commanding officer turned around and said, the 39th parallel. We were literally about to cross it. Anyway, that was the borderline, as you know. And then, of course, we turned round because the Chinese came into the war. At that time, I had a message to say from Brigade Headquarters that I had a nomination to go to Camberley, to the Staff College. So I know we were short of officers, and then I said to the CA, well, I think I better stay here. No, Dennis, you've got to go. You've got to go. So I went, and I eventually got back to Hong Kong in time for Christmas, whichever, I don't know when it was. Christmas, was it 50?
Yes.
Yes, Christmas 50. And there I was grabbed by General Evans, Jeff Evans, the commander, and said, Dennis, you've got to give some lectures to those 28 Brigade were going up to Korea to join the Commonwealth Div. Got to give them lectures on Korea. So I did a whole lot of lectures around Hong Kong, and then I was sent down to Singapore to do some. And by that time, the chance of getting to Camberley, the new term had started, and that was that. So I didn't ever go there, which was very sad. Now then, what next happened? Oh, then, yes, my papa died in 52. 52, would that be? 52, yes. And the battalion were coming home anyway, and so I went first. But I had been told that I was going to MO3, this in the War Office, as a G3. Because I think everyone thought that I was a bit of a genius, but I wasn't, you know, far from it. And I didn't have any illusions of grandeur at all, but I knew I was fairly competent as a staff officer as well. So I enjoyed my time in MO3, and I was there 2.5 years, and I had a very good G2, Douglas Withers, John Douglas Withers, sadly now dead. And the DMO at the time was, oh gosh, forgotten, he was a nice chap. They were a very good lot in MO. And then MS said it was about time that I went back and did a bit of real soldiering.
MS?
Military secretary, in other words, going back to my regiment. Well, as I told you, I knew that the state of the Middlesex Regiment, recruiting-wise, was very, very poor. Not only that, the whole of the home counties brigade, the East Surreys, the West Kents, Royal Sussex, you know, were very badly recruited. And I knew that there were lots of officers in the battalion and in the brigade, the home counties brigade, as it was called, much more clever than I was. And so I thought I'd better go to try and go to some outfit where I might shine a bit. And I chose the military police because I knew they had some very poor officers and they didn't have any regular officers. So I tried, and I was accepted by the then Prevost Marshal. who said to me, I would like you to go and sort out our mounted side at Aldershot. It needs someone who knows a bit about horses, and I think you're the chap. So I went there. That's to be DAPM Aldershot District.
Which year is this?
Oh, this is... I went there in 1954. That's, yes, after I'd finished at MO. And strangely enough, John Douglas Withers, my G2, he went to the King's Troop, and I went to the Mounted Troop of the Military Police. So we both went to horse units. It's most extraordinary, really. And we used to see one another at shows and that kind of thing. So I had some very happy... three very happy years at Aldershot, hunting in the winter and then producing the show in the summer. And, I mean, Aldershot, the home of the British Army, is a wonderful place to serve, although I thought it was ghastly when I first went there, but I got to love it, and I still like Aldershot today.
Why did you get to love it?
Well, it's the home of so much tradition, and, I mean, the Victorian Army really started there from nothing. It was just heathland, and they built this marvellous camp with some lovely buildings, some beautiful buildings, several of which of course have been destroyed and new buildings put up which are now falling to pieces, and I loved Aldershot, and it was so close to Long Valley. I mean, you'd exercise the horses in the morning, within a mile you were out on the most gorgeous country, so everything was very good at Aldershot as far as I was concerned. Lovely messes and very nice people there. And I had a house at Cobham, which was easy, and I used to motorcycle there every day, a matter of about 27 miles. So I used to set off from home by 7 o'clock, and I was in the office by just after 8 every day. So that was very good, and we had a very nice house I'd had that. I bought that house when I was in the War Office, and... So that was very good, and the children were educated there. Anyway, then what happened? Oh, well.
Could I ask you what relations were like between civilians and the army in Aldershot in those years?
In Aldershot?
Yes.
Very good indeed. And one of the things that I specialised in was liaison with the local police. You know, sometimes there hadn't been any liaison, and they were very helpful and very useful. And we did a great deal with the local council. And eventually, I mean, I wasn't there at the time, but no doubt some of my efforts went towards it. We were given the freedom of Aldershot. The Corps has the freedom of Aldershot. While I'm talking about that, you know, feathers in one's cap, the second battle honour that the 2nd Battalion Parachute Regiment has is Oudna. And there's no doubt about it that 1 Platoon A Company was more involved in that battle for the station and for the thing than any other outfit to see, although there were more casualties behind us in C Company and the other company. So I'm very proud that Oudna is on the banners, both Queen's colour and regimental colour, of the 2nd Battalion. So where did we get to?
Well, you were in Aldershot.
In Aldershot, yes. 57. And then I was sent to Germany to command 1 Corps Prevost Company, which is the biggest Prevost Company in the Corps, or was, and of course 1 Corps was the spear point, spearhead of the British forces in Germany.
Whereabouts in Germany?
Well, the headquarters was at Bielefeld, but of course the front was actually the border of where we had our checkpoint going up to Berlin. That is in those days, the German border, which was, of course, completely controlled by Russians.
So which years were you in charge of 1 Corps?
1 Corps Prevost Company, I think I went there in 1957, that's quite right, yes, 1957. And I had 3 very happy years there. And I did all kinds of things. I started mobile patrols with white cars. I started a better driving course for NCOs, and that was fun. Did a lot of motorcycling. I still had horses because I looked after the stables as well in Bielefeld. It was very enjoyable, very nice people there, and it was very easy to go skiing in the winter down to Austria, where I did a lot of skiing with the family and that kind of thing. We had a lot of friends down in Austria, and we made a lot of German friends too. So then I had to come from there. I came back to Edinburgh to command the company at Edinburgh, 170 Prevost Company. And that was very good because we had a great deal to do with the tattoo, policing the tattoo. And all the traffic control and what have you up there. The tattoo producer when I went up there was a man called Brigadier Alistair MacLean. He was known as the Abominable Showman. He produced the tattoo, a retired officer, and he produced it very, very well indeed. But he was very concerned about being Scottish. And when I eventually was interviewed by him, he was very charming and said, "Oh, Dennis, do sit down." I sat down in front of him at the desk. He said, "It's lovely to have you here. We're quite delighted, and it's marvellous. You all have these Scottish connections, and that'll be very good. You'll enjoy it here." And I said, "Brigadier, I'm sorry, but I don't have any Scottish connections at all." He said, "No, no, you misunderstand me. You have some connection in some way with Scotland." I said, "Absolutely none." There was a dreadful hush, and he looked down, and he said, "What have you done wrong then?" So I was being sent to a punishment station. Anyway, we became quite good friends. And the kind of thing that happened was I, strangely enough, took over the old cavalry barracks at Edinburgh, at Redford. And I had the old veterinary lines with lots of lovely loose boxes. And so I did quite a lot of hunting up there as well with my own horses. And I had to look after things like when the Queen came up for King Olaf's state visit to Edinburgh. They brought up coaches from the Royal Mews, and they brought one squadron of Household Cavalry up for the procession. And I had to stable all these horses, which I could do easily with all the boxes I had available, and plus other stables. And I'd known John Miller, who's the Crown of Kerry at that time, and one of the I can't remember which coach it was that came out from. They broke one of the straps going onto the springs. I don't know if you know the way the coaches. They have leather straps up to springs, and one of these leather straps broke. I had been offered a job, strangely enough, by the Edinburgh Co-op to look after their horses while I was there, which I refused anyway. But I knew them very well, and I knew they had a saddler's shop, which was magnificent, and they had wonderful harness. They had lots of horsed vehicles. And they even had a collar maker and a whip maker, and my whip outside, last whip I had, was actually made by this one whip maker. That's all he did, make whips, whalebone whips. Anyway, I said to John Miller, I know who can repair that. You come along with me, and I'll show you the co-op saddlery shop. And he went, and now the Royal Mews have the contract. They have the contract to repair and paint, look after the paintwork, because they have most gorgeous paints up there, by this very same chap, well, he's dead now, who offered me the job to be his number two and then to take over from him. The reason I didn't was because I thought, being a Sassenach up there, you know, the milk horses, for instance, we bought horses in Ireland for the milk floats, not just for Edinburgh, but for the whole of the co-op movement throughout Scotland. And I thought, you know, if we have some rotten old milkman, they say some ruddy Sassenach, we'll have terrible trouble. So I refused the job. I'm glad I did, actually. But it was fun commanding up there. And anyway, that's what happens now. And you sometimes see, it's not called a co-op in Edinburgh. It's called, I can't even remember that. It's dreadful. Anyway, you see one of their big Arctics in the Royal Mews, which they're loading a coach to take up to Edinburgh to refurbish. Oh, gosh, I can't remember it. St. Cuthbert's, that's what it's called. So, where did we go from there? Oh, yes, from Edinburgh I went down to the then depot of the Royal Military Police, was at Woking, St. John's, where you live, and I was the chief instructor there. And one of the things I did was to reorganise the complete training programme of not only recruits, but the refresher courses. And I caused various things, qualifications to be brought in for promotion. Managed to get all people with over 3 years up to full corporal, providing they were qualified, of course, and rewrote the training directory. So I had quite a good time as chief instructor there. But I didn't last long there. I was only there a year, I think. And then I was promoted, and I went to Chester as APM there, where, again, good hunting up there.
In APM?
As APM, Assistant Purvey Marshal. As a lieutenant colonel's post. From there, I think we had 2.5 years in Chester, which was very pleasant. We had a lovely house right in the middle of the town. Then I was posted back to One Corps, but this time as the APM, the lieutenant colonel there. And that, I had a real ball there, because I'd always wanted to reorganize the traffic plan of One Corps, how you to get people to the right place at the right time, and I did. And so that is now, well, I don't know what happens now, but it was right up until the time of the change in Northern Army Group, when it ceased to be that, and it's now part of the NATO force. The traffic plan was mine, which was run all the way through, and I enjoyed doing that very much indeed. So that was good. I had 3 years there with John Mogg and John Mogg as my first one. No, Jones was the first one, a very good sapper as the corps commander. Then John Mogg, and then Tubby Butler, an ex-parachutist, so I got on very well with him.
And where was this?
This was at Bielefeld, back at Bielefeld, where the headquarters was. And then from there, I went to... I went to command the depot here at Chichester. As a full colonel, and I had a jolly nice time here, because I knew it all well. I mean, I know the country very well, and we've lived in and around Bognor, Aldwick, and here most of our lives. Our parents had holiday houses down here, you see. So then that lasted for about 2.5 years, I suppose. And then I was posted to be Purvey Marshal Ryan Army. That's the PM of the whole lot, which is a full colonel's appointment. And I did 3 years there, this time at Rhine Darlan, the headquarters at Rhine Darlan. And then I came home to be the Purvey Marshal. The headquarters then was as a brigadier, and that was in Lansdowne House then, now refurbished and not part of the War Office at all. But it was a rather... new type flat lets, where you could have breakfast if you wanted in a restaurant downstairs, or you cooked it your own. I think they were called service flats. It didn't make ideal offices, and the loo's always going wrong, that kind of thing. It was pretty ancient. I suppose about 1930. But anyway, I enjoyed being Purvey Marshal. Then I thought I had to get a job. And I was invited by the Royal Automobile Club to come and run their motorcycle side of things and to look after their motorcycle training scheme.
So when did you retire from the Army?
I finished in 1977, April 77. And I had 6 months off, because we just bought this house and I wanted to get the garden right. And then I went to the RAC, and I had a lovely time there. And I got ill after 4.5 years. I had a stomach cancer, and I now have a colostomy, but it doesn't affect me very much. But I had to stop driving and dashing about all over the place, which I used to. And so I left the RAC. It was very much a gentleman's outfit when I left there. It's very different now. My boss recently came and had lunch with us. Who was the director of public affairs, and he said it's shocking now. So there we are. So I'm glad I'm out of that, and I haven't done any work since, except I ran the Army Benevolent Fund here. I was with them for 15.5 years, and eventually became the chairman for the last five. I started Neighbourhood Watch in the village. I'm still the senior trustee of the museum, the Military Police Museum.
Are you glad that you chose an army career?
Oh yes, because I love it. I love the army, adored it, and I miss it every day. You know? But you see, my children say that it's like a bloody museum, this house of yours, father, and it is in a way. But there we are. That's about it.
Just one thing that you forgot was the name of the German.
Oh yes, Hans Teske. Hans Hanstesk.
How did you find him?
Well, he found me. I went to, I go every year, I used to. I have stopped doing it now because I'm no longer the president of Two Power Association. I've given up all the things of being president everywhere because it meant dashing about the country far too much, and at my age it was getting a bit much. One, our reunion, the Two Power Association, Power 1941-45, always takes place at Stoke Rochford, which is near Grantham. And one year I was up there, and this chap came up to me and said, he speaks with a slight German accent, but he lived in England for years. My name is Hans Tusk, and we have something in common. And I said, oh, really? What's that? And he said, well, first of all, we have both been POWs. And secondly, we've met on the battlefield. And I said, oh, really? Where's that? He said, well, do you remember a farm in Tunisia? And I said, yes, I do. And he said, do you remember holding up in a barn? I said, yes, I do. And I said, and you were one of the chaps on the motorcycle. He said, yes, I was the one on the pillion. And I came to have a pee against the haystack. And he said, and I saw black boots of the British Army with studs on coming out of the straw. And I first of all thought they were your dead. But I knew that other people were in there. And then I looked up and I saw you pointing a Bren at me. And I said, Hans, marvellous to meet you. And from then on, we've been the greatest of friends. And I went to, he's a great Anglo-German chap, and I went to, he got a presentation from the Anglo-German Society of a gold watch, a pocket watch. And I went up, he asked me to come up, and would I say a few words? Well, I know, the Anglo-German chap asked me, because I'd written, they said, will you come up to this thing? And I'd written back and said, yes, I'd love to, because I'd nearly killed Hans on one occasion, and he probably would have killed me otherwise. They said, how is this? But would you like to talk about it? So I did. And his family had never really heard about it. And that's that.